It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A minute and a half past the hour, and we begin a brand new week of broadcasting on the horn. Independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting at what I consider to be its very finest. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, of course. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and become part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password at the tab chat room, and you'll be greeted by Earther and Hoghead and Laborman and Squeaky 41 and VT Blom, and you will be moderated by Midweek Utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. That's how it all works. It's free. It costs nothing. Nothing at the horn costs anything. The program's free, the podcasts are free, everything's free. This attempt at independent progressive broadcasting is brought to you by the people who listen to it. It is brought to you by the Horn community. Never do I go down to the bank and cash a check from a Russian oligarch or from an organization owned by the Russian government, or which in turn is owned by sweet, cuddly, lovable Pooty Poot, who is not a homicidal maniac who orders the murder of journalists, gay people, and political opponents, even when he does. No, that never happens. We are not paid by advertisers who want you to buy herbal erection tonics or natural hair growth remedies or mattresses or wood floors or steel buildings or wave radios or vacuum cleaners or bowling balls. Although I must admit that we are in negotiations to begin offering you a nutritional supplement the likes of which you've never heard. Literally. It's a nutritional supplement that carries all of the nutrient value of an entire day of eating in a couple of tiny capsules. That's right. Righteous rutabaga. Righteous rutabaga may be coming to the horn. And when you purchase righteous rutabaga, well, your eyes will have a certain sparkle. There will be a spring in your step. A shine on your teeth, and vigor and vitality in your every waking, and for that matter, sleeping moment. That's right, righteous rutabaga, to live life the way life should be lived. You need righteous rutabaga. Yeah. No, this program comes to you because people want this program to come to you. We have subscribers. We have subscribers over the weekend. Thank you very kindly to Sharon in Ohio. The program also brought to you by Philip in Texas. Also brought to you by Dave in Florida. And by Randy in PA. Brought to you as well. Brought to you as well by... our buddy Robert in Australia. That's the overnight, over the weekend subscription crew. And we thank you very, very kindly. Because that's how the program stays on the air. Plain and simple. And in this day and age, I think it's pretty damned rare that there's a program out there that asks, that doesn't ask you to buy something or call somebody or deliver with it an inherent message of some particular bias or another. Now, pursuant to a promise I made yesterday, as we try to fundraise our way so that we can lick the Lithuanian, nudge the Norsky, and cash the check. Cashing a check having been added this past week by our friend Sylvia. I promised yesterday that if we reached a certain goal, we would stop. There's not going to be any fundraising on Thursday. There will be no mentions of fundraising on Thursday, the 31st day of August. And we are into having no fundraising on Wednesday, the 30th of August, either. That depends on raising $160 this evening. If we raise $160 this evening, there will be no fundraising mentions on Wednesday. If we raise $360 this evening, wait, do I have that right? Yeah. There will be no fundraising mentions on Wednesday or tomorrow. Okay? And if we should happen to raise $560, well, I won't fundraise for the rest of the program. How's that? That's really not a... no. Thanks very kindly to our subscribers. Thank you to Rocky, who jumped in and became a new subscriber over at Patreon. Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And we really appreciate that. And thank you to David, who also became a subscriber at Patreon. Everybody who subscribes, everybody who contributes, gets mentioned as a creator of the program. That's how independent broadcasting works. Okie doke. So, $160, there won't be any fundraising on Wednesday. $360, none on Tuesday, but we got to raise $200 this evening. So, there we go. It is the last week of August. There's 4 days. We begin September. On Friday, I should mention, yes, remember, this is the radio network that broadcasts on holidays. So the horn will be on the air Monday, Labor Day. And tell your friends and your neighbors. Now, there's a tab called Contribute over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And if you click on that, you'll find a little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. If you're George Soros, Leo DiCaprio, George Clooney, et cetera, you put about $10,000 and you click Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, and things get really, really good, really, really fast. Program expands, listenership expands, fundraising disappears. All of it. But otherwise, just put $10 in, and click make this a recurring monthly donation, or if you don't, put whatever number you want in there and don't make it a recurring monthly donation. Just help us keep all this going. Good evening. A good evening, a greeting coming from someone we haven't heard from in a while, Ron in the far soon-to-be refrozen north. It's, of course, late August up in the Canadian capital, which means it's probably about 30 below at night now. Ron says, I finally got a few minutes, not otherwise allocated, to advise you all that I'm still up here in Canada being a difficult Canadian in the eyes of the orange toilet clog. Strange, but I find that job description one of the easiest jobs I've ever had. I know. All you have to do is resist. Isn't it beautiful? Thanks for letting us know. It probably just took a few minutes to write in as he polished the parka and began, retrofitting and winterizing the mukluks and all those things you have to do. Right. I'm kidding. It's not 30 below in Ottawa yet. It will be. So, good evening, brother Ron. Okay, let's talk for a minute. I mean, we're going to talk for 3 hours. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, we got that out of the way. And I will say that I am damn proud of the fact that this program is beholden to no one and nobody. There's no self-censoring that goes on for fear of offending a corporate sponsor or some sketchy Russian oligarch or a dodgy website. I read an account recently by a guy who worked for a little while for Sputnik. And it didn't last long at all because he wasn't very good at towing party line. Yeah, it was interesting indeed. But no, we are truly independent here. When you tune into the horn, you can know one thing. What you hear coming out of my mouth is not driven by anybody who passes me a great big money check. Establishment shill? Fuck off. If I was an establishment shill, the establishment would be giving me a hell of a lot of money. And trust me, they're not. Goddamn DNC apologist. No. Not really. Because, you know, not cashing a check from the DNC either. Not getting a money. Nothing coming from big anybody. But that means that, well, I have the luxury of speaking my mind and doing so fearlessly. So that's what happens on this program. I'm kind of presuming here that you have that you're pretty much up to speed on what's happened over the Texas Gulf Coast since last we spoke. It is horrifying to behold. The hurricane itself ripped the living shit out of part of the Texas Gulf Coast, 140 mile an hour winds, and then lingered, backed out into the Gulf, did that whole pinball thing, and the Houston area is receiving levels of rainfall that are that some people might describe as being of biblical proportions. The death toll is being variously given at somewhere between 8 and 10 so far and expected to rise. And the rain itself has obliterated rainfall records, well, since people started measuring rain, at least in that area. And when the water recedes, it inevitably must, there's going to be a mess to clean up that we can probably, that we are, anyone is probably hard pressed to imagine. And yes, there's some sniping going on, and it's justified and justifiable. Among other people, a Republican member of the House of Representatives got the ball rolling. Not some, you know, not some Democrat, not some DNC shill. No. A Republican, Peter King of New York, tweeted, Ted Cruz and Texas cohorts voted against New York, New Jersey aid after Sandy, but I'll vote for Harvey aid. New York won't abandon Texas. One bad turn doesn't deserve another. You know, you'd almost expect somebody from the rival political party to make that statement, but no, that's Peter King, a Republican from New York City, or the New York City area. And the point he makes is a valid one. Because Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time. Well, he did. He voted against, you remember when Sandy hit? Terrible devastation on the Atlantic coast, New Jersey and New York. Massive property destruction. And even as far inland as Appalachistan, where I live, we got the back end. It was the damnedest thing. It was a foot of snow and took out power for a week and a half, 2 weeks, something like that, here. Nothing compared to what happened on the coast. But Republicans from Texas and from other Confederate states, to be fair, said, well, you know, we can't be blowing up the deficit taking care of a bunch of homeless Yankees. We got to be fiscally responsible. Of course, it didn't help that, you know, that one at the time was still in our White House, and he wanted to deliver relief as quickly as possible to the people affected by Sandy. And so naturally the proud sons of the Confederacy had to stand up against the Kenyan Muslim usurper who wanted to help people. Clarity pointing out, if we could get Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Ted, not a Cubano Cruz, to throw themselves into the volcano, not virgins, but it's a start, maybe the sins of Texas would send the wrath elsewhere. Appeasement of the gods now, says Clarity. Amen. Amen. Yeah, amen. Oh, well, speaking of amen, it is, after all, Moran Monday. The 28th of August, 2017, falls on a Monday, and I got to say, this particular Monday Moran, alongside Ted Cruz, who, you know, I don't know, would Ted Cruz just start to melt the minute you got began getting him a little bit near where it gets warm? Because every photo near the volcano, because every photo I see of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, every photo I see of him, he looks a little more like he's made of wax and that somebody's turned off the air conditioner in the wax museum. Yeah. But alongside Ted Cruz, who is, of course, well, I mean, I don't want to put too, fine a point on it, but, yeah.
You dick!
He is exactly that. That's right, Professor Spicoli. There's another one. And this is a particularly monumental level of dickishness. And the penis wrinkle in question is one Joel Osteen. Now, it's not Wednesday. It's not prayer meeting. So this isn't a particularly Jesus-y thing. It's just that Joel Osteen makes about 77 million tax-free dollars every year. That's what, in the name of freedom of religion, we the people of the United States, trying to make that more perfect union, that's what we give of the commons by not making him pay taxes. That's what we give to Joel Osteen. And Joel Osteen has locked down his megachurch in Houston, while the city that hosts him, you know, Houston, sinks beneath a monumental amount of floodwaters. Back 2 days ago, Saturday, at about 3:39 p.m. Central Daylight Time, Joel Osteen tweeted, "Victoria and I are praying for everyone affected by Hurricane Harvey. Please join us as we pray for the safety of our Texas friends and family." This did not sit well with a number of people out in the Twitterverse who began to give him grief. Because he was doing precisely, what's the technical term? Precisely not dick. In the midst of the worst disaster Houston has ever seen. And yes, the doors of his megachurch, as of this broadcast, remain closed. Yeah, they canceled services yesterday morning, saying that the megachurch was inaccessible as a result of flooding. There were photos on Sunday showed that the Lakewood Church had heavy flooding around it, but wasn't itself flooded. And people have begun asking, why is this tax-free gospel haven that houses on Sundays thousands upon thousands of worshipers? Why are its doors not open to the suffering masses there in Houston who have nowhere to go? I mean, just look up Joel Osteen Lakewood Church, and you'll see how massive the interior of this place is. But apparently there's nothing in the Bible about helping people who are without homes. You know, except the entirety of the message of Jesus H. Christ. Yeah. Note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. Bob, you can't expect Joel to open the church. Everyone knows people in dire need can't fill the collection plate as it's passed around. Well, that and, you know, some... you have to remember, this is a prosperity gospel church. So the only way you get to be part of the prosperity gospel is if you bleed yourself out supporting the church. While I was traveling, I heard about the biggest prosperity gospel church in Northwest Alabama. And if you want to be a member of that club, you have to submit your tax documents in order to have them analyzed by the deaconate and, of course, the preacher to determine what the appropriate level of your tithing will be for the coming year. And the way, you know, the way the prosperity gospel goes is it's a promise that the more you give, the more God will give back to you. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is Joel Osteen doesn't want any of the hoi polloi potentially tracking mud and floodwaters and bringing their... possibly unsaved and certainly penniless selves into God's sanctuary there at Lakewood Church. By the way, when I said thousands of worshipers, Brother Deacon Asa did the work, said 17,000 worshipers to be exact. It's the former venue. Yeah, it's the former venue of the Houston Rockets. That's how big Lakewood Church is. Y'all ready for this? Yeah. Something like that could be actually useful in the midst of a disaster. But no, we don't want the unsaved in a place like that. So I'd say that he has to be the lead Moran for Moran Monday. But it also wouldn't be Moran Monday if we didn't mention, you know, Nitwit Noah, otherwise known as Donald J. Trump. There's a fascinating photograph out there. It shows goings-on at Camp David. Just a minute. of people sitting around a table, ostensibly engaged in updates to the flooding. Clarity pointing out, Joel Osteen probably invests in Marriott stock and doesn't want to lower the rack rates. Possible, possible. But this photograph shows Vice President Mike Pencil Neck Geek and other members of the cabinet sitting around a table at Camp David, which I'm sure that Clementine Caligula thinks is also totally a dump. And in a sort of Where's Waldo situation, Donald Trump is sitting off by himself, kind of like at a presidential kiddie table. If you want to see it, the photo on Twitter was shared by Christina Wilkie, at Christina Wilkie, W-I-L-K-I-E, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, W-I-L-K-I-E. She tweeted, White House releases pics of Trump's Hurricane Harvey briefing today. Trump alone at Camp David, everyone else with Vice President Pence in the White House Situation Room. So they're at the White House in the Situation Room, and Trump is just kind of sitting there at the kiddie table, and they got him out of the way. They sent him to Camp David so he couldn't fuck anything up. So that they could actually try to coordinate a response without him doing something stupid in the middle of it. Oh, no, no, no. Here, Don. Here's a fidget spinner for you, and here's a fidget spinner for Don Jr., and here's a fidget spinner for Eric. Y'all just... Yeah, and here's some for the grandkids, and one for Boron, and y'all just go up to Camp David for a little bit while we try to figure out how to deal with this here hurricane. Yeah, really. That's one of those a picture is worth a thousand words moments. But no, as I said, Ted Cruz is also a nominee. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, who looks always like he's made of wax. He was interviewed by CNN, and those crafty devils with their gotcha questions got into the issue of the way he tried to shiv people in New York and New Jersey over Sandy. CNN also has some really, really cool, scary flood graphics that show floodwaters rising over a sign that says Hurricane Harvey.
At the convention center in Houston, where there are some 3,000 people taking shelter here, I know you've been out. Give me a sense of what you're learning about the magnitude of the devastation.
Well, the devastation is historic. It exceeds anything we've ever seen before. We had initially a Category 4 hurricane make landfall several days ago. It pounded coastal communities, pounded Corpus Christi and Victoria and Rockport, did significant wind damage and flooding damage. But then the storm has become a tropical storm and just parked on the Gulf Coast, has moved over towards the Houston region, has just been dumping in the neighborhood of 50 inches of rain. And we haven't seen a storm just sit and rain and rain and rain. And that flooding has been widespread. We've had over 2,000 high water rescues. We've got people who are seeing their homes destroyed. And this facility here, the George R. Brown Convention Center, has the capacity for about 5,000 who've lost their homes.
Yeah, just a brief interruption. He mentioned rescuers in boats. Well, that's true. And some of those rescuers are from, they are, well, I'll call them Good Samaritans. Bible-y term thing. It's really not nice to call, at least within biblical terms, to call somebody a Samaritan, because that means they're deemed to be subhuman and you know, untouchable and that. But anyway, an outfit called the Cajun Navy has come west from Louisiana with all manner of boats to try to do high water rescues, because there are people still desperately in need of them. And of course, you know, of course, well, they've had to dodge bullets to do it, because after all, it's tax sales. Clyde Kane of the Louisiana Cajun Navy told Headline News that panicked Houstonians have been shooting at members of the Cajun Navy. He said people that want to be rescued are trying to steal the boat. Yeah, Carol Costello at Headline News said, are these bad people or people who want to be rescued? Interesting question when the guy has just told you his rescuers have been shot at, but nonetheless, Clyde Kane responded, bad people, people that want to be rescued, and people that are just panicking. We have boats being shot at if we're not picking everybody up. They load a boat up, and they go to take, you know, motor away and come back for more. And people, well, screw you, buddy. I ain't in your boat. I'm going to shoot you. Oh, it's another one of those beautiful, beautiful Second Amendment moments brought to you by America's most well-connected, politically powerful, wealthy domestic terror organizations, the National Rifle Association and Wayne LaPeter. It's a dictator for life. The Cajun Navy has had to replace boats even as they try to rescue people. Clyde Kane said, we're kind of under attack. This is not surprising because of a photograph that circulated. Yes, we're talking about photographs on the radio. Yes, yes, we absolutely are. A photograph circulated of a bunch of bubbas with goons standing around a message. Not really a sign, because it's just painted on a stationary object, a message. They all got their freedom protectors, their blue steel penis extensions, and on a piece of wall that they have painted to look a little bit like the Texas flag, you know, vertical blue bar, horizontal white and red bars. Lauders, that's how it's spelled. Lauders, Lotters, or I don't know, maybe it's conceivable they decided to use a Greek letter in amongst all the Roman ones, in which case it would be loppers. No, well, I don't know. Now, let's assume that they're all Roman letters. So Lotters, lauders will be shoot on sight. Lotters. Yeah. And one person trying to seek shelter from the storm got shot by a freedom protector. I guess we should consider ourselves, or people should consider themselves lucky. But there haven't been more such incidents. Okay, yeah, a little background. The place where Lakewood Church is what used to be named as known as the Summit, courtesy of Haley. And that's where the Houston Rockets played basketball. It's also where, in 1977, the Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team won the Southwest Conference Championship. And it was eventually renamed the Compaq Center before it was sold to upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical man of God, Joel Osteen. Steve says they just didn't have enough space for the past tense of shooted. It's the lotters part that gets me. Steve, lotters. Because there was plenty of room instead of... There was plenty of room to make that L-O-O-T, but, you know... Hey, yeah, Earther with a good question, yeah? What's he got? What do they got against lottery salesmen? I think that would be lottoers. But of course, some people there are going to see this as a gratuitous opportunity to declare a sort of open season on people that they don't like or don't know they do like or something like that. Ah, okay, thank you, Earther. Lotters is lazy otters. Well, one would think otters would be happy. Never mind. But I began all this saying that I presume you're pretty much up to date on what's going on with Hurricane Harvey and its aftermath. I mean, we tend to think of hurricanes as the blowing wind part of things, but the torrential, constant, unrelenting rain is also the hurricane. It's just the part that isn't really terribly interesting television viewing, like watching some dude from the Weather Channel more or less holding himself horizontal against the winds as the storm comes ashore. That's the sexy telegenic part of the hurricane. But you know what's really weird? Houston is getting hammered, and it's not even as bad as it could be. Why? Because it didn't... Houston didn't get a direct hit with the front end of the storm. It came ashore further to the south and west of Houston, and then lingered with the bands of rain of the northeast quadrant over the area, and then moved a little and pinballed and came in again. And so there are parts of East Texas and Louisiana that still stand to get an absolute shit ton more of rain. What, Beaumont, places like Lake Charles, Louisiana? This will be going on for a few more days. And the absolute inability of the country to be prepared for one of these storms will also continue. Storm warnings are out for the Atlantic coast as well, the beaches of North Florida, through the coastal communities of Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Delaware, Maryland, as a, what are they calling it, Irma? And Tropical Storm Irma moves up the coast. That may get ugly. And it seems with the passage of time and every new storm, they, A, get worse, and B, our ability to deal with them gets worse. Because, of course, what underpins all of this is the failure of our idea of the common weal subsumed to Republican ideas of igumfu. I got mine, F-U. And let's remember, and this, you know, this goes back to a conversation we had previously. Texas, as big a state as it is, and as ostensibly wealthy as it is, Texas can't cope with this storm. It really is. It's going to take the determination of all of America to try to help Texas recover from this. But we should also note that as soon as, and we'll, it'll be years in the recovery, at least unlike the aftermath of Katrina, there probably won't be any disaster tourism. But to the extent that there's going to be a recovery, well, there really won't be any planning to make it any better the next time, and there will be a next time. You cannot blame Harvey directly on climate change, but you can damn sure say that climate change makes storms like this decidedly worse. One of the more ironic things I've seen on television, I saw earlier this morning, NBC sent some reporter, I'm not sure whom, to report on the state of the gasoline refineries, the oil refineries, along the Texas coast, because there's a lot of them. And especially in the southeast, gasoline prices will begin to rise. We just say that because it's like a law of nature or something. It's not a law of nature. Gasoline prices will begin to rise because these refineries are shut down. So naturally, with an artificial scarcity of supply, well, you can't expect capitalists not to just squeeze out all the profit they can possibly find. No, of course not. This is Merca, the greatest country on the history of the world, on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. So naturally, we're gonna have to help generate some profits for the oil industry. But anyway, they sent this reporter to do a stand-up in front of an oil refinery where there was no one working because it had been shut down and all the workers had been sent home because of the danger of the storm. The interesting and, dare I say it, ironic part, however, was that as he did his stand-up saying, "Well, Chris, you know, there's just not a lot going on down here. The refinery's been shut down and all the workers have been sent home." After having been introduced as, "Bill is down at a refinery in near the Houston area where all the workers have been sent home and the refinery shut down. What's going on down there, Bill?" "Well, Chris, there's not a lot going on down here because the refinery's been shut down and all the workers have been sent home. Nothing is happening." And as he said those words, "nothing is happening," my eye traveled to the background, not looking at him, but looking at what was happening, because he was doing his stand-up with the refinery in the background, where I counted no less than 4 different stacks with plumes of methane burning off into the atmosphere. You know the ones I'm talking about. At nighttime, it looks positively eerie. It looks like something that Sauron would have dreamed up for the especially ghastly effects at Mordor. Or you remember what? Remember one of those opening scenes from Blade Runner, where every now and then a great plume of flame shoots out of that. And so at the same time that a hurricane was battering the living bejesus out of the Texas Gulf Coast, and even though there was no one there at the refinery, well, there were burning methane plumes sending more heat and more carbon into the atmosphere, thereby, to some degree, one degree or another, making climate change worse and making the next storm worse. And I pointed to the screen and, Agnes, look at that, look at that. Nothing going on here. Look at those methane plumes. And you might recall that within the last month or so, the Comrade Kumquat administration took aim at Obama-era regulations meant to reduce the amount of methane and methane byproducts released into the air. I'm not laughing. Ain't nothing funny about it. Under the subject line, Trump logic, Matt in San Francisco writes in, okay, now wait, let me see if I got this right. We sacrifice entire swaths of the country to catastrophic storms so we can keep burning coal in order to create jobs for about 40 men. My head hurts. That's how it works, Matt. Coal keeps lights on. And in other news, talk about, talk about rotten luck. A man who survived the Sago disaster 10 years ago in West Virginia, the one where shoddy mining practices killed 13 men, and the coal company continued to claim it was caused by lightning that struck 300 feet under the earth. No, really? The same way Bob Murray claims the Crandall Canyon disaster was caused by an earthquake that was not registered by any seismic device anywhere, and regulating agency, Mine Safety and Health Administration, said it was caused by by pulling pillars, because you can't leave those pillars that hold up the roofs in there. You can't leave those in there because that's coal, and we can sell that damn coal. Pulling pillars. Everybody knows that pulling pillars is brutally dangerous. But anyway, he got killed at a nearby mine in Randolph County, West Virginia. A mine being operated by a Ukrainian firm. Which brings me to a correction. Last week, in an episode I called Green Acres on the Volga, I presented a scenario by which our governor, Jim Kunta Kinte Justice, might have tried to intercede on behalf of the Trump administration with that lovable, cuddly, snuggable friend, common friend to humanity, Pooty Poot. I will admit here that I was wrong. I was absolutely wrong. It was not Pootie. It was not Jim Justice. Nope. Not by a long shot. It was, in fact, a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelical from West Virginia. A man named Rick Clay. After the Dearborn letter, Dearborn email came out last week, there was a great deal of speculation as to who would have tried to set up a meeting between the Trump campaign and Pootie Poot. Well, apparently, CNN reporting, it was Rick Clay. He passed along a request from a friend who wanted to set up a meeting with Trump officials and Putin. Yeah. I wish I was kidding. He said his friend, Rick Clay did, he's 54. Rick Clay said his friend was a devout Christian who had come in contact with Russians through their work in Christian organizations. He couldn't recall, Rick Clay couldn't, the name of the Russians. And he didn't disclose the name of the friend who sought the meeting, only saying he lives part of the year in Alaska and part of the year in Pennsylvania. But Rick Clay's a West Virginian. Clay said of the meeting that they wanted, the thought was if there was an opportunity to get two sides together to talk about Christian values, then that's important. That was the gist of it and didn't go anywhere. Of course, when you're talking about Russia and Christian values, what you're talking about is the Christian value, among other things, of torturing and murdering people for being gay. Sort of like the Christian values there in Uganda. Mm-hmm. Interesting, though, that it did sort of loop Shelley Moore Capito into the process, because Rick Clay had her ear and told her about how he wanted to discuss a Christian meeting of the minds between Putin and the Trump campaign, and she, of course, just passed the information along to Dearborn, because, you know, that's what she does. She represents, that's what she does for her constituents. She just represents them and passes along meeting requests for meetings between foreign nationals and, you know, presidential campaigns. It's what a senator does. Just look at what a good God-fearing, upstanding former Alabama Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III did with the, oh, wait, well, Dearborn was his former chief of staff. Mm-hmm. So, it was not Jim Justice. We regret the error. Okie doke. So we got that going for us. And here we find ourselves at the top of the hour. My assumption, well, I mean, there was more to talk about than I actually thought. Note coming in from Steve on the Gulf Coast. Can't prepare when you ain't ever preparing. How are we going to deal with natural disasters when all the money's tied up in militarizing the police and terrorizing the citizenry instead of helping them? Maybe the next hurricane will just run away when the local goon squad aims a grenade launcher or lobs a little tear gas. Yeah, I know. There's a scene, one of those delightfully cheesy old 50s sci-fi horror flicks. Maybe it was The Blob. Was that one? Where and maybe it was a little Ron Howard. Or maybe it was his brother. But The Blob comes oozing into a movie theater or something, and there's a little kid in cowboy gear, and he's got his cap pistols with him, and he shoots at The Blob, and then I think I seem to remember he takes his pistol and throws it at The Blob, and it just disappears into The Blob. Right. Exactly. Kind of hard to prepare for hurricanes when preparing for natural disasters is not what you're interested in. When getting armored vehicles and grenade launchers to police forces is what's really at the top of your priority list. I mention that because in the ongoing effort to damnatio memoriae everything regarding President Obama, the Tangerine Tiberius regime has overturned a rule that limited police access to military-style weapons in the wake of Ferguson and the slaughter of Michael Brown and the holding hostage, for all intents and purposes, of peaceful protesters via hyper-militarized police with things like snipers and machine gun nests on top of armored vehicles. Mm-hmm. Point well taken, Steve, on the Gulf Coast. Or I hope you're battening down hatches because if it's not rainy already, it's gonna. So we are 2 minutes into the 7 o'clock hour here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and we'll take our evening, our top of the hour break. Big thanks. Great big thanks. Going out to Larry. Thank you very kindly, Larry. Larry finished off fundraising for Wednesday. That means there will be no fundraising on Wednesday. So now we are at a point of finishing off fundraising for today and tomorrow. So that'll be $400. If we do 200 more, there won't be any fundraising tomorrow. And that'll leave us $200 shy of licking the Lithuanian, nudging the Norsky, and cashing the check. So, thank you. Thank you very kindly, Larry. All right, then. Let's do take a break. As Ron and Raleigh pointed out, relative to the evening's bumper, this one, yeah, it is. It's almost too obvious, but nonetheless. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Independent. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Storm, riders on the storm, into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone, an actor out alone, riders on the storm, take a long holiday. Let your children play. If you give this man a ride, sweet family will die. Killer on the road. Riders on the storm, riders on the storm, into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone, and actor out on loan, riders on the storm.
Now you see what Ron and Raleigh meant. Almost too obvious. But yeah. The Doors, a classic. Riders on the Storm. 10 minutes past the hour. And I neglected to mention that, of course, the lines are open for conversation for this Moran Monday. 304-574-8178, or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Thank you very kindly to Charlene, who took a bite out of tomorrow's fundraising, with and that leaves 175 to go, and that means 375 to finish the week. So that's where we stand. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very, very kindly. 200 this evening and 175 for tomorrow, and August is finished. And I can spend the next three programs saying nothing about fundraising if we knock it out tonight. Ron also pointed out, what do you expect? Stupid people with guns. What could possibly go wrong? I know. And, so the Confederate Navy is getting shot at. Not Confederate. The Cajun Navy is getting shot at. I was thinking about the next story when I said Confederate. It's a story of a cage fighter from the Houston area by the name of Derek Lewis. And he gave an interview to MMA Junkie. That's a mixed martial arts website. And talked about what he's been doing, because he's from the area. He talked about what he's been doing in the midst of the storm. He's got a really big, high, jacked up truck. And he said he'd been going out on rescue missions using his jacked up truck. Responding to Facebook requests for rescue. In the interview that he gave to MMA Junkie, he said, I picked up one guy and his family, his wife. He just kept apologizing to me because all he really had was his clothes, and he wanted to take his Confederate flag. He wanted to take that with him, and he just apologized and said, man, I'll sit in the back of your truck, man. I don't want to have my flag inside of your truck like this. I said, man, I'm not worried about that. He said, you never know if you never need someone. So I already knew where he was going with it. I just said, don't even worry about it. It's okay. I don't care about that. And his wife, on the other hand, kept hitting him and saying, you dummy, you should have just left it. By way of sort of explaining it all, though, Derek Lewis said, I live in Texas. It ain't nothing new. I've been living in the South all my life, and it ain't nothing I hadn't seen before or discussed about. I didn't care about that type of stuff. I just wanted to help him. It's a beautiful moment of its sort. But can you imagine? You can't stay alive by being in your home anymore. You got the clothes on your back. And you look up and go, but I gotta have my Confederate flag. I guess people do strange things in the midst of crisis. Strange things indeed. Okay, Asa says I did the retraction wrong. It's not how you do it, Bob. Thou shalt not rescind. You double down on your story from last week and say you done seen it with your own eyes that Jim Kunta-Kinte Justice done tried to arrange a meeting between Pootie and Tupi. Tupé. You know, Trump. Jeez. And I said, God, why'd you make me so rich? Oh, dear God. Yeah. And this that came out earlier, out of the mouth of Mar-a-Lago Mussolini himself. There was, of course, much discussion over the weekend of the news that broke, even as we were on the air with Friday on the Front Porch. The news that broke that Trump had pardoned notorious, vicious, racist, and constitutional scofflaw Joe Arpaio. Trump admitted that he released the information when he did because he thought the ratings would be higher for his announcement because of all the attention being paid to the arrival of Hurricane Harvey. I wish I was kidding. In the middle of a hurricane, even though it was a Friday evening, I assumed the ratings would be far higher than they would be normally. You know, the hurricane was just starting. And this, of course, was during a press conference with the president of Finland, Sauli Niinisto. Don't take my word for it. Oh, no. It really. Oh, for pity's sakes. No? Not gonna happen? Oh, well, we had the audio, but... So, you're having an event with the president of Finland, and you use that moment to announce that it really what mattered to you as a hurricane of epic proportions was bearing down on the Texas Gulf Coast, one of those states where people really, really love you. The thing at the top of your mind was getting good ratings for your pardon announcement. Yeah. Just further proof that, you know, he ain't home. Oh, and by the way, just to finish off with the clip from Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America.
We're at about 3,000 right now, but it's expected to be full by the end of the day.
I know that the estimates are starting to come in about damage and devastation. What do you think this is going to cost the federal government?
I think the damage is going to be very extensive. It's premature. We don't have a specific cost estimate. And part of the reason is the focus right now, quite rightly, is on saving lives. There are still people in very real jeopardy. And so, you know, for folks who are at home, if you see water rising, try to get to a safe place. Don't go to your attic. The attic is a very dangerous place to be unless you have an axe or something to get through the roof. What you should do, if it's rising fast, get on the roof. The roof is safer than the attic. And let me especially encourage you, don't get in your car and try to drive into water. Unless it is an emergency, the most dangerous thing you can do is go in a car, driving into fast-moving water. And so the focus right now of state officials, of local officials, of federal officials, is on search and rescue.
I know that as you're talking about that, and that's your focus, that some of your colleagues on Capitol Hill are talking about how do we fund response and the recovery. But Peter King of New York specifically, he's tweeting at you that he plans to vote for funding even though you didn't vote for Sandy funding. Can you give us a sense of what you expect from your New York, New Jersey, Connecticut colleagues?
Oh, look, there'll be plenty of time for politics, and I'm not going to worry about political sniping. My focus here is on the tragedy that's unfolding.
Yeah, unlike when Sandy was striking and his focus was not on the unfolding tragedy, but rather trying to make sure he could stick a finger in the eye of, people up there in those godless blue states.
People whose lives are in jeopardy and the people who need help. And I have been spending day and night working, trying to coordinate with local officials, county judges, mayors, speaking with the governor, repeatedly speaking with the president, the vice president, with cabinet agencies, and trying to marshal federal assets to save lives. That needs to be the priority. The silliness of Washington, we can worry about another time.
Yeah, the silliness. Of course, he was balls deep in the silly when it was about, people that he politically despises and, actually despises and Christianly despises who needed the help. Then it wasn't so silly. Meanwhile, Matt in San Francisco notes, the best they can do? So the senator's best idea is get on your roof? How did he miss being appointed to head FEMA? I know. Well, but remember, these are the smartest people in America, Matt. A lot smarter than any of us.
This given you a different perspective? Do you think that you would have voted differently about the Sandy bill, given what you're seeing in Texas?
No, of course not. As I said at the time, hurricane funding is a very important federal responsibility, and then I would have eagerly supported funding for that, but I didn't think it was appropriate to engage in pork barrel spending where two-thirds of that bill was unrelated spending that had nothing to do with Sandy and was simply politicians wasting money. That shouldn't happen. The focus of emergency relief shouldn't be cynical politicians trying to fund their pet projects. It should be providing relief to people who are in crisis. And Sandy, there were people in crisis. Here with Harvey, there are people in crisis. And
the only difference being that with the people in crisis in Sandy, you tried to fuck them, Ted. Yeah, you did. What a sweetheart. Jack in Shreveport, subject line Texas. And oh yeah, we need the federal government to pay for Texas because we don't want to have to pay any income taxes. Yeah, that too. I know. Ted Cruz, he hates him some federal government. I mean, he hates the part of the federal government not the part that writes him that humongous check every month. Not that part of the government that provides him a pension for the rest of his natural born days, the likes of which most Americans can scarcely imagine. Not that part of the federal government that provides him the best health care on the planet and for his family as well. No. It's the part of the federal government that is we the people trying to form a more perfect union that doesn't involve enriching Ted Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, booger-eaten future king, anointed future king of America. That's the part that Ted doesn't like. And, of course, this morning on that little program that's my Agnes and my filthy little habit every morning, they managed to trot out Greg Abbott to talk about how we're working real hard on this here disaster relief, and I'm calling out some National Guard, and I just thought, maybe this, I don't mean to sound like an asshole or anything, but it would be real nice if a guy who despises the federal government and despises the people of the United States and thinks that Texas is a law unto itself could take a moment and say, by the way, we just want to thank all them taxpayers from New York and California and Washington and Oregon and Massachusetts and all them other places that pay federal taxes, most of which come down here. We'd like to thank them for propping us up. We really would. Thank you very kindly. And by the way, I reckon I'm just going to have to come to the conclusion that climate change is real. Psych! Just kidding.
Need to focus on solving the problem and meeting people's needs, not engaging in political games.
What's your message for business leaders who are looking at this? I mean, in Houston the downtown area is
right.
Shut down.
Yes.
It's a ghost town. How do we get back to the business of Texas with all the water still coming in?
Well, Texas will rebuild. Houston will rebuild.
No, not really. The people of the United States will rebuild Houston. The people of the United States will rebuild the Gulf Coast. Yeah, that's more like it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to. It's really just hard to listen to Ted Cruz and not.
You dick!
You're called to it. It's a calling. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, little news we might have missed along the way. It broke just before airtime. The North Koreans. It actually managed to shoot a missile at Japan a little bit ago. No, really, they did. It broke up over Hokkaido, the northern island. And to Japan's credit, they didn't shoot back. Made me think about the fact that what did Kim Jong Crazy Pants say? He said we're going to shoot some missiles at Guam. So naturally, of course, Dolt 45 said, "Okay, they're going to shoot one at Guam. Get all our missile defense systems that are so good at shooting missiles out of the sky, as long as the other missiles have radio homing beacons on them. Get them set up for Guam, Hokkaido." Wile E. Coyote, super genius. Mm-hmm. Kim Jong Crazy Pants is playing Donald Trump like a pawn shop fiddle. Because, you know, China said if we shoot first, if we attack North Korea, China said, well, you know, they'll defend North Korea. So what North Korea would like to do is get both of those countries, which have kind of been on their ass, going at each other. Which in turn would, you know, wreck the global economy because everything is made in China now. Yeah, crazy like a fox. That'll make for some interesting discussions in the next 24 hours or so. Brother Deacon Asa takes issue with Trump's statement about ratings. He said, "I doubt it was about getting good ratings on the occasion of his pardon announcement. It was because he knew the elevated ratings would mean more Nazis would hear about him pardoning a fellow Nazi." Hell, Asa, I didn't even know there was a Snoop Dogg version of Riders on the Storm. I am, after all, a fogey. An old Oogie. Okay, let's run over and check in with Jim real quick. Hey, Jim, what's happening?
Okay, pretty good. So you're an old pogey, huh?
Well, I didn't know Snoop Dogg had a version of Riders on the Storm, did you?
No, I could care less about that, because that's one particular song in one particular group that you really can't improve upon, period.
The Doors are the Doors are the Doors.
Yeah. That brings back a lot of memories. Thanks to the album, Weird Seeds Inside the Gold Mine.
Whew. Yep.
I mean, that's when we had the old bong with the stirrups on it.
And the aquarium pump?
Mm-hmm. Sure did. And so,
yeah, one of these days you really ought to draw up plans for that, because I got a feeling there's an entire generation of young people who would love to build an aquarium pump-powered bong with stirrups on it.
Oh, hell, they probably already done it. These are pretty resourceful young people. I mean, you know, what can I say? But anyway, I was just, you were talking about flags a few minutes ago. I just finished making a flag wreath.
Okay. And describe
it. It's just, well, it's, I'll shoot you a picture of it later on, but I'll tell you what, it's covered with artificial ivy, variegated, but the ivy looks real. And then on top of that, I had to get some, it looks kind of wild, so you get some carpet thread and wrap it around it to give it some form. And then I've got two big UN flags on the top. And then about flags from different other nations around the center. And, of course, I've got two American flags sticking out of the side, you know. Got to do that, keep the neighbors happy. But that's what I've been doing.
Oh, it sounds like a nice bit of handicrafts.
Well, you know, something to, I don't know, pass the time. I mean, I see you more pictures of my crazy place where I live. So
I saw it. Yeah.
Can you imagine somebody living in a place like that?
Well, just, you know, look, as long as you've got a path through, that's all you need.
That's it. You got it. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's got lots of books and lots of fonts and stuff like that. I love it all. But anyway, going back to this thing in Houston, you know, you were exactly right Friday night when you were talking about how that thing was circling around and bounce around, and it sure has. And I don't know if it's regained enough strength to go back over the Gulf. It went back over the Gulf to come back into Louisiana, but you know that thing could go back into a tropical storm and a hurricane again before it gets through.
Depending on how much energy it picks up when it gets back over the Gulf, yeah.
Yeah, and plus it's got its own, you know, rain system within it. It's just incredible. I mean, this thing is just. They had one shot on TV, and it was a home for the aged. And they had people. They had one woman sitting in a recliner, and she was up to her chest in water, sitting in that recliner. You seen that picture?
Yeah, I have. There's I've seen a lot of pictures. The one with the sheriff's deputy with the two children, one in each arm.
Oh yeah, that's just really heartrending. And you see a lot of people are coming out there, and they don't have anything with them but their pets' cages, too.
Well, and there are heartwarming stories of heroism and human compassion. And then, of course, there's the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement people. San Antonio, Jim, was within the warning area for the rain as the storm came on shore. You know, it's considerably inland, but it was still going to get the rain.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a story from over the weekend. ICE agents dumped about 50 women and children at a downtown San Antonio bus station this past Friday after bus service was canceled due to the hurricane. 50 women and children who were asylum seekers from Central America, and Immigrations and Customs Enforcement just dumped them at the bus station and said, "Go with God."
That's real, real class and mercy, isn't it?
Yeah, oddly
enough, Mexico even offered to contribute money to the hurricane relief, and I thought that was kind of strange, but they did.
Well, hard to say this, but I kind of wish they hadn't, because you know what geezer disgust us will do with that. See, Mexico gave us some money. I told you they'd pay for the wall.
That's got to be the stupidest damn thing I've ever heard in my life.
Come on.
Does he not have any idea of how obsolete fortifications and barriers like that are? Has anyone from his military advisors tell him, look, these things went out with the Middle Ages practically, and they're not going to keep anybody out, and it's just a waste of money? And yet he's threatening to shut down the government over this thing. He's just as crazy as a sprayed roach. He really is, and just as dangerous as a tarantula. And I don't know. I didn't hear about Kim Jong-un. What did they do? They were just test missiles?
I mean, it was the same thing he always does. He just, it was a missile test.
Just wanted to let him know he could do it, huh?
Wanted to let him know he could reach him, and he did.
Well, he's proved his point. But that's still a situation that is just, oh boy. I mean, between the thing in Charlottesville and this hurricane, people have not been paying too much attention. And they mostly focused on, well, first initially Charlottesville and then the hurricane. And, of course, what a convenient time for assholism to pardon another asshole who, in my opinion, is no better than one of the camp commandants of Dachau or whatever. Have you ever seen documentaries about that tent city that he has?
Oh, God, yes. He's a damn monster, and yes, he's a monster on a par with. And look, Jim, we're not imposing a trope on him. He personally called what he was doing himself. He called it a concentration camp.
Yeah, exactly. And each meal costs a quarter, 25 cents. Well, I'm sure that's just some yummy stuff. And people in tents at 120 degrees and on a chain gang, you talk about.
Well, forget, he also got his jollies out of making his prisoners wear pink panties.
Pink panties?
Yeah, oh yeah. That was standard. That was standard issue.
For everybody?
Yeah. Men.
Oh, he's just a fucked up old man, and I tell you what.
I would like to make one point here, and I think this is a salient point. Even if this evil old bastard had gone and done the jail time that he was sentenced to, he would still have been treated with more humanity and dignity inside the federal system than any prisoner that was ever within the legal care, custody, and control of him and his department.
I'd love to see him do his time in Tent City.
But he wasn't going to. I mean, these were federal contempt charges, so he would have been inside the federal system, and he would have been treated with more dignity than any person.
Yeah, you're right.
And remember, he was out there on his own little personal papers, please mission, Jim. He was rounding up people without regard to whether or not they had a criminal charge against them, if they looked illegal to him. Now, in Arizona, you got to have a pretty good idea of what looks illegal. I mean, you could be paler, whiter than I am, and be talking like this, Bigora, don't you know? And he would not pick you up. Even though, you know, there's a massive, or was a massive, undocumented, illegally in this country, Irish population. But they're not going to get picked up if they're, you know, they're in Maricopa County. And because they don't, somebody like that, you know, red hair, blue eyes, pale skin, freckles, whatever, is not going to look illegal to a sheriff's deputy working for, you know, Sheriff Joe.
Oh, yeah. Incidentally, I listened to some of the legal discussion Friday night, which I think was one of the better programs I've heard with your Front the Porch group. I mean, y'all really had it going on. I mean, if lawyer's a lawyer, and you know exactly what could be done to him. And I think the ultimate outcome was to say they couldn't do anything to him. And once the president pardoned him, he can't do anything. The only thing I think he can't do, I don't think he, if he were deposed before Congress or whatever, he couldn't swear behind that. He couldn't use the Fifth Amendment. I don't think he could do that.
No, and he can still. It is not a pardon for all crimes past, present, and future, unless it's described that way. It's a specific pardon for a specific act. So if there are other violations of the criminal law out there, then he could conceivably be charged with them. But the problem is that this case didn't arise from a criminal charge. This was criminal contempt in the wake of his contemptuous behavior toward a lawful order of a federal district judge telling him, stop it. And he said, you, to the federal judge. And then, I mean, there were hoops jumped through on this, Jim. Then, in order to make sure that there was no prejudice, in order to make sure that he was treated fairly, the judge who had heard and issued the order for him, the cease and desist for him to stop violating the Constitution, well, when he was held in criminal contempt, the criminal contempt case was moved over to an entirely different federal judge.
Well, are you surprised?
No, I mean, what I'm getting at is the entire process was appropriate and legal and done according to Hoyle, if you will, or the Marcus of Queensberry rules. And so for Trump to say that he was somehow being unfairly targeted or subjected to a witch hunt is...
Well, that's what I was trying to say. You know, they did try to do everything right and by the book. And then again, Trump just shows utter contempt for it. That's what I meant. I mean, of course, if you're going to go after somebody like that asshole, you better do it just strictly by the book so no technicalities can arise to make you wish you had done something different. But they did everything they should. But still, Trump comes down there and pardons him, and he can't be touched. I don't think anybody can bother him about that. Maybe somebody out of, you never can tell. Sheriff Joe just might be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, now the little bastard at 80, what is he, 85? Something
80.
Like 80-something. The little bastard's
80.
Talking about running for office again.
Well, what office? Sheriff?
I don't know. Maybe he'll run for U.S. Senate or something. I mean,
oh God. Well, you know, coming from some of the people who put him there in the first place, I don't know. I don't know what the politics are in Arizona. I thought they were a little more, a little better than that. But yeah, he probably will. Yeah, I'm sure. You know, and of course, all this because he stood up there last year and. Trump was right next to him, and he was right next to Trump crawling up his ass. So,
well, what it boils down to is Joe Arpaio is one of those very fine fascists that Trump was talking about in regard to Charlottesville. You know, he's not a neo-Nazi. He's not walking around with a swastika or anything. He's a very fine fascist.
Well. There's no such thing as a very fine fascist. He's an asshole. And he's the kind of person that, well, I would not be unhappy to see him depart or wherever. You know, I mean, just look at the guy. He's just mean and cruel. And I've seen him striding around that Dachau he has down there. And, you know, explaining to the camera why he did what he did and you know, the types of people he would put in the hole for I don't know how long. And I don't think there's any air conditioning in that place at all, even for people who are sick. I don't know if they have an infirmary. I doubt if it's air conditioned. I mean, you're putting people through 120 degrees. And I just wonder how many people have really died down there of heat exhaustion and you know, illegal practices. It's just hazing is what it is.
There's another word for it too, Jim. Torture.
Of course it is. And, you know, there's no redemption in anything he does. There's no rehabilitation. And he himself admitted that half people were in there will be back in the next year that came out. So, I mean, he just enjoys right? You know, all he needed was some black boots and a horse and a whip just to be riding around. He probably got that when you should see it. You know, I think he gets his jollies by doing these things to black people and brown people and stuff like that.
Oh, by the way, a totally separate topic, but the sort of thing that might elicit from you a shriek or a screech at least an oh my God. I read a report provided to me by Devin. It comes from NBC4 WCMH TV Columbus. The copy reads as follows: those looking, and this goes back last week to the eclipse. Those looking for alternative ways to protect their eyes from Monday's solar eclipse are now seeking medical treatment after putting sunblock on their eyeballs.
Oh no! You gotta be shitting me.
Nurse practitioner Trish Patterson tells KRCR she hasn't seen any cases of damage by looking directly at the sun, but she and her colleagues have seen a few patients who experienced pain after putting sunblock in their eyes.
I wonder how old these people are who did this.
You know, stupidity is not cognizant of age. Now this is a far cry. I mean, there's mistakes and then there's stupid. Many and many a year ago, when I was just a young stoner, I reached into the glove compartment of my car where I kept a little bottle of eye drops. Because, you know, granted, we didn't have an aquarium pump powered bong with stirrups on it or anything, Jim. But
I should never have told you about that.
Well, I'm never going to let you get away from it either. But
that's all right.
There had been enough doobage passed around that, you know, I had Rand McNally eyes, you know, with the little red lines. You know. And so I reached into the glove compartment for my bottle of eye drops and neglected to recall that. Now, for people of a certain age, they're going to go, what the hell is he talking about? Once upon a time, children, there were these things called cassette tape decks in automobiles. And there would get to be a sort of buildup of tape grime on the heads, so you would have to use a head cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And head cleaner is almost, well, it's pure alcohol. It acts as a solvent.
Yeah.
And I had neglected to recall that I also kept the head cleaner and the head cleaning solution in the glove compartment. So,
dear God,
being stoned as all be, what do they say in Caddyshack? He's stoned to the bejesus belt. I reached for the first plastic bottle, and boop, and drop, hop.
I'll bet you came down after real quick on that one.
I tell you what, I was one sober son bitch. But I wasn't so stupid as to put it in both eyes. These people apparently have sunblock in, they put sunblock in both eyes to keep them from going blind so they could look at the eclipse.
You know, it's a strange thing. I remember being tested for glaucoma, and they put these little things to measure the ocular pressure of your eyeball, these little sensors. And my God, when those things touched my eyeball, I just went out of the chair almost. I mean, it's such a sensitive portion of your anatomy. I mean, you know, it just is. I mean, you can't mess with your eyes. I'll tell you one thing, when you put anything against them or even get like a grain of sand or something like that in there, it will drive you absolutely crazy until you get it out. And that's all there is to it. I mean, I've never experienced such pain as my life is that ophthalmologist put that thing on my eyeball, and I said, God damn, what are you doing? He said, it's over with. Your intraocular pressure is normal. I said, thank you. I mean, putting sunblock, oh, God, that's just incredible.
Welcome to Idiocracy.
Well, you got it. And, you know, since they Oh, Lord. Lord, Lord, Lord.
I know.
I don't know. But anyway, that's just, it's just incredible, some of the things that people do.
But I thought, like, you'd, I thought you'd get a kick out of that. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure they got a kick out of it. I wonder how long it took them to get to the ER.
They were just kind of sort of hurt.
Oh, man, sort of hurt. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that would just drive you absolutely crazy. Oh, Jesus. I mean, that even hurts me to think about it. I mean, that's one thing, you don't put anything in your eyes or whatever like that. Good Lord. But like I say, it's just idiots in some of the stuff that people do. And you can compare it to him pardoning old butthole sheriff down there, because both of them are cut out of the same bolt's cloth, really. And now he's shown absolute contempt for the judicial system of the country. And, you know, he's just stepping and stepping and stepping. Oh, I just wonder, if he don't get his wall, is he going to try to shut the government down?
He said he's willing to.
Well, I just hope that there are enough people in the Senate and the House to override his veto. Now, if he does that and he loses that, that's going to be a major defeat for him. I mean, that will really, really just knock whatever little piece of wind he's got out of his sails, you know?
Well, it's that's true,
that's going to be coming up real soon, too, because September 30th is the drop-dead date on that.
I thought it was even before that, but...
30 September. That's when the government runs out of money and the new fiscal year begins, October 1st. Now, for the states, it's July 1st or something like that, but the federal government is October. Hell, I was working in D.C. when the government got shut down. That was a real, well, it was nothing but like a 10-day vacation for me.
No, we don't need it. We do not need it.
I know. I went to work, and they just said, Andy, you can't come in here. You're not supposed to be here. It was just for vital military personnel only. And I said, well, I've got things to accomplish. He said, I'm sorry. You just can't do it. He said, you just have to go home and work on it there. I said, okie doke. So I just tooled around Washington, went up and watched some of the people going into the Capitol and from the gallery. And I don't know. I had a good time. I didn't worry about it. We got paid. And it cost the government how much money will it cost to shut down? It's billions of dollars.
Yeah, but he doesn't care. He doesn't care.
Well, you might want to talk to Newt Gingrich about something like that, but we'll just wait and see. Well, listen, my friend, I hope you are going to have a good week, and I enjoyed your program Friday night immensely. You had some good people over there offering a lot of good advice and institutional knowledge. And like you said at the other program, it was one of the better ones that you'd had.
It was a humdinger. We were all over the place. It was a humdinger of a Friday on the front.
It was good. It was good. It was real informative. And, you know, nobody occupy all the time, which is good. I think sometimes you have people who do that. And to tell you the truth, I don't see how you... well, as a moderator, I think I would have to call their hand on, hey, there are other people you want to talk to.
And we do that some. We do that some. Jim, you have yourself a good evening. Take care.
You too.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from not too far away from here. And, of course, you heard Rufus in the background. I've got a, you know, with the coverage of the flooding on the Gulf Coast is necessarily focused on the human drama disaster aspect. But I read one article earlier noting that there is an entire Superfund site that is underwater right now. And then with a reprint from the New Republic, Mother Jones, as part of its Climate Desk collaboration, has a story. There's an unbearable chemical smell hovering over parts of Houston, and experts are worried. The communities can't leave or evacuate, so they are literally getting gassed. Here's the first couple of paragraphs. As historic rainfall and flooding continue to pound America's fourth most populated city, residents of Houston's industrial fence line communities are reporting strong gas and chemical-like smells coming from the many refineries and chemical plants nearby. I've been smelling them all night off and on this morning, said Brian Paris, an activist at the grassroots environmental justice group Tejas, T-E-J-A-S. Paris, who lives and works in Houston's East End, on Sunday said some residents are experiencing headaches, sore throat, scratchy throat, and itchy eyes. He said there are chemical smells in the air all over the East End, but particularly in directly in communities directly adjacent to Houston's sweeping petrochemical industry. And residents can't escape the smell because floodwaters have overtaken the city and could reach over 4 feet in some spots. Fence line communities can't leave or evacuate, so they're literally getting gassed by these chemicals. So remember that. It's still unclear exactly where the smells are coming from, but Paris suspects the source is the many oil refineries, chemical plants, and gas facilities nearby. Yeah. Some of these plants have shut down or are in the process of shutting down due to Harvey's historic flooding, and shutdowns are a major cause of abnormal emission events, according to a 2012 report from the Environmental Integrity Project. Shutdowns are a major cause of abnormal emission events. Upsets or sudden shutdowns can release large plumes of sulfur dioxide or toxic chemicals in just a few hours, exposing downwind communities to peak levels of pollution that are much more likely to trigger asthma attacks and other respiratory systems. Once again, a reminder that for all that we do focus on water-related issues, and rightly so, when it comes to sacrifice zones, and the area along the Gulf Coast is every bit as much of, or more of one than Appalachia is, what you can't see can kill you. Let's run over and check in with Steve from Georgistan, taking a break from his moderating duties. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob. What's going on, buddy?
Just sitting here doing a radio show.
I hope you can hear me okay. I got my cheap headset on, but I still got my eye.
You're golden.
I still got my eye on the room in case you know who shows up. We'll get him the hell out of here.
Yeah, we'll lightsaber his ass.
But the reason I wanted to talk to you was for several points. One is, you know, right now we're okay as far as supply, but I've been studying, and from what I understand, we got about 10 days supply left in the pipelines. After that, you know, it could be chaos. And I'm not saying this, and I don't want people to run out and top off their tanks or anything like that. But it could happen. The potential is there. If you remember Katrina, it did happen. Gas shot up to $5 a gallon. I just wanted your thoughts on that.
Well, I understand it's a commodity and it's a floating price. And I understand it's capitalism, so we're all at its tender mercies. Right, Steve?
Right. Right, exactly. But people have to have gas. You have to get to work. You have to support your family. And I don't blame people for chasing down gas trucks. Hell, I was probably one of them at one time. But when you're just topping off your tank, then you become part of the problem.
Here's the question, though. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a government that could step in to make sure that profiteers and capitalists didn't just leap in to try to gouge the bejesus out of the system just because they can? Just because there's a shortage at the pump, because of a, say, shutdown of refineries, does not, I mean, that has not a goddamn thing to do with the production price of crude oil at the wellhead. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly. And why do we have our refineries all located in one central area? Why don't we spread them out? This all goes back to infrastructure.
Well, I mean, they are spread out. I mean, my God, there's an oil refinery right on the West Virginia Kentucky line. Bet you didn't know that. Ashland Oil.
Did not know that. So you think they're just, this is a ruse?
Well,
it's gouge prices or?
Well, of course it is.
And put people in a panic?
Of course it is, because that's the, watch the oil company stock prices soar. All right, but yeah. You know, down there, that area, the Gulf Coast there, has what, something in the 20 some odd percent range of the refining capacity of the United States. Now, if you pay attention to the right wing, and God knows I've heard this before, you will hear the following. My friends, the reason that we have our refineries where they are is because the un-American, godforsaken commie EPA won't let people build refineries all over the fruited plain where we need to. Which is just bullshit.
Biggest lie they ever told, isn't it?
Well, no, they told some whoppers, so.
You know. Yeah, that's up there in the top 100, at least.
But that's, you know, that's where. But the fact of the matter is, they're kind of happy with the situation as it is. The reason they built refineries by the coast is because it makes it easier to offload tankers.
And panic will set in. I remember, hadn't been that long ago, last time Karen and I went to Tennessee. There was something happened in Alabama. They had a big fire at.
Oh yeah, that's when the pipeline blew up.
Yeah, and there were shortages. I mean, we were worried that we weren't going to be able to make it back because all the gas stations had tape wrapped around. So you know, and I don't want to be a part of the problem. I'm not trying to create any kind of chaos or anything. I'm just trying to do the opposite. If everybody will keep a level head, we should be able to get through this. We're resilient. We've got through things like
mostly
this before.
Mostly it's the Southeast that's going to be affected by this. You know, you.
Right. But from what I understand, it goes all the way up the East Coast, all the way up to Maine.
Well, some of it does, but not all of it. I mean, New Jersey looks like New Jersey because, well, or what most of us think of when we think of New Jersey. Because
Chris Christie. And there was one other topic I wanted to preach with you, Bob, and then I'll let you go take another caller in. And let me add, I do appreciate you taking my call, man. It's an honor to talk to you. It really is, without sounding patronizing or anything.
Yeah, now stop that, or somebody will send me an email calling you a sycophant.
Yeah, okay, all right, I'll stop it. All right. What I wanted to talk to you about, and I've heard other talk show hosts, there's one on in the morning who is enamored by the topic of impeachment, and they're all hanging their hat on this, you know, this Joe Pyre thing, and they are so convinced that they've got enough dirt on Trump to get him the hell out of there, and I'm looking at this hard, and I used to be one of these people. There's no there. There is no crime. There has to be a high crime or misdemeanor
but
to get him the hell out of there.
Yeah, but
there's nothing there.
No, but wait, Steve, wait. High crime or misdemeanor, or high crimes and misdemeanors, as Rick pointed out Friday night, and we've got to get this all the way down to our toenails, impeachment is not a legal process. Impeachment is a political process.
Exactly.
So high crimes and misdemeanors can mean whatever a given Congress says it means. For instance, back in the 90s, high crimes and misdemeanors meant getting a blowjob.
And that's why Clinton was impeached and not removed.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's a right. Political question, not a legal one. That having been said, however, if Donald Trump went out in the street and started shooting people. You know, there's no doubt that there's absolutely no legal discussion whatsoever in this country that premeditated murder is a felony. Right? Are we agreed?
Oh, yeah. It's
right
black
wing, left
white.
Wing.
Sure.
It's not a question.
Anarchists, whatever. I mean, that's
But the thing is, if Donald Trump went out and started shooting people in the street for no reason whatsoever, you know, along the lines of what he said during the campaign, I could shoot somebody in the middle of Park Avenue and nobody'd touch me. Right? Or I wouldn't lose a point on my support. Well, the other thing that wouldn't happen is this Republican Congress would not impeach him. And I don't know how many times I have to say that, Steve. And I'm not gooning on you, okay?
No, I understand it. You're gooning on.
I think it would go a long way toward maybe saving what little is left of our constitutional republic if they would impeach him and would try him and would throw him out.
But there's not enough statesmen in the House or the Senate currently.
There's not enough patriotic Republicans.
No.
Again, this is one of those things you have to get all the way down to your toenails. They love their party, and they love the power that they have more than they love their country.
And all they need is some goon that's capable of signing legislature, and they're happy with that. And they don't care how far off the rails he goes. They're happy with that. And this is why we got to get people motivated to vote. Vote, 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 vote. Because it all starts in the House. And I know it's a long shot. It's like rolling snake eyes. But damn it, we need something to hang on to, right?
Well, I mean, everybody, you know, John Lennon, that wonderful song, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, right?
Exactly.
And if that's what people are hanging on to, then that's what gets you through the night.
I know,
but
you don't.
But it ain't gonna happen.
So we're kind of in a constitutional crisis. There's no way out, is it, in your opinion?
Nope. The only way out happens in 2018. You know,
if we can hang on
Trump,
that long.
Trump is probably getting ready to ditch Rex Tillerson. I don't know if you noticed that, but
yep.
He's probably the next one he's going to start tweet bitching at. But until 2008, no, 18, no. And the margin is very slim. The hopes are very slim in 2018 of taking both the House and the Senate back and then imposing a remedy. And this is where I piss people off. But hey, like I said at the beginning of the program,
you're a realist.
This program is independent. It runs on the determination of listeners to keep it going. You know, I get bitched at by the little sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade. Yeah, you know, you know, fuck you. You know, you're not listening to the program. What do you care? All right. But so I can say what's on my mind. I can say exactly what I think without worrying about what a Russian website or some oligarch or some company that produces radios or floors or what the fuck ever thinks. I can speak my mind with complete freedom. And so I will say that we will not take the House in 2018 and we will not take the Senate in 2018. Because there are way too many people in this country, ostensibly on our side of the political aisle, who are far too involved and far too and enjoying far too much their lingering butt hurt over what happened in 2016, it's one of those a pox on both your houses kind of moments. Remember, is it Romeo and Juliet, where the prince of Verona says to the Montagues and the Capulets, a pox on both your houses. It's one of those situations because the people who run around saying, you goddamn DNC, Debbie Wasserman, Schultz, fuck, we robbed. That bunch is pissed off. And guess what? The hardcore hilarians are pissed off, too. You fucking Bernie brats.
So you think they're pissed off enough where they're just going to keep bending over and taking it?
No, they're not going to keep bending over and taking it. They're going to keep they're going to keep fighting their own little internal civil war while the house burns down.
Well, the Susan Sarandon, let's burn this motherfucker down. So that's what they're all about. Then, is what
you're saying. No, Steve. No, I'm saying that the internal division inside the supposed left and the center left and, you know, Democrats generally. The internal and you know, the independents who should be on our side but are too butthurt to, you know, do that. I'm saying that they're enjoying their little civil war, and they're not capable of looking out and noticing that the entire goddamn republic is going down the toilet. It's a matter of priorities. It's a matter of focus.
It's like a horse with blinders on. What's to enjoy about this? This is tragic.
Yeah, but see, but they're right, okay? I was told a long time ago in law school that there's an old Hungarian curse. I don't even know if this is true. But there's an old Hungarian curse. Remember, it's a curse that says, may you be involved in a lawsuit in which you are sure you are right.
Almost runs parallel with the Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times, you know. That's a curse.
Right, and it's a curse. The self-righteous certitude is a curse. And I'm not, you know, I'm not being self-righteous about this. The Democratic National Committee was a wholly owned subsidiary of Clinton Inc. Okay, it was, and it was set up and designed to be that because she was not supposed to have any competition in 2016, so it was just going to be a well-oiled machine banging on all 16 cylinders, whose sole purpose was winning the general election, not winning a primary fight.
We were just going to ride that horse home to victory without even having to look back.
Right, because it was her turn, for Christ's sake.
Right.
Okay? And I say that in the little sparkle ponies. See, an establishment shill. God damn it, he said it was her turn. See, I knew all along he didn't really support Bernie. Yeah, fuck you. It was a mess, Steve. But the thing is, it's what we've got, and what never occurs to people is that there nothing succeeds like success. The Green Party is not going to deliver us in 2018 or 2020 from the tender mercies of Trump and his maggots. It's not. It can't.
Or 24 or beyond.
No, but 18 and 20 are what matter here. There's only we got one thing. We got the Democratic Party. That's the only opposition that can provide the machinery to get the job done. And now and it needs to operate in 2020 with its thumb off the scale. But, you know, again, like I said, I'm on record. I'm predicting that people are enjoying being butthurt far too much to actually focus on the problem at hand, which is the fact that the country's on fire, at least the part that's not under fucking water.
And one more question for you, Bob, and then I'm going to toss it back to you and let you take another call. Do you think this Joe O'Pyre thing was Trump's way of saying, hey, you know, go ahead, don't worry about anything, I got your back?
Well, who put that theory forward on Bill Maher over the weekend?
Where I got it from.
It's getting some play, and it's a viable theory. that this wasn't even a dog whistle. This was a referee's whistle, really loud,
screaming from a megaphone
that you can hear in the nosebleed section, three tiers up. You can hear that whistle, and the theory goes that its purpose was to tell anybody who might be tempted to roll on Trump to just go ahead and take the heat, keep your fucking mouth shut. Get
lie.
Convicted, lie, it doesn't
it. Yep.
matter, because at the yep. end, I'll pardon you, because I'm going to be in office, because no matter what I do, the Republicans are not going to stand up for the country and get rid of my ass.
And it all rolls back to lying is not a high crime or misdemeanor or an impeachable offense. And this, we're wrapped in this enigma that I don't see any way out of. I just don't. And the more I think of it, the more depressed I get. And I don't mean to make these calls to bring everybody down. I love all the Horn listeners. I love you. You know that, man. But it's just my own powers of observation.
And I don't think you're bringing anybody down. It's reality. Like I've said before. This is like that sign that I'm told hangs in some AA meeting rooms. Reality spoken here. And if we can't talk about reality, if instead we're constantly lost in the constant search for the constant search for the perfect the antagonist, the constant search for the perfect recipient of blame, we're done.
And you can't live your head with the clouds thinking, oh, good, impeachment's right around the corner. We got them now, because it's not there. It's not there.
Well, okay, tell me who it is that's preaching impeachment, the impeachment day of Jubilee is a-coming. Tell me who is that, Steve?
I don't want to mention names, Bob.
Mention names. It's not like anybody's going to get mad at you. Are they preaching that over at Stephanie Miller? Is that what's going on?
Yes, sir. Very pretty lady, and I love Steph. I do, but she's just enamored with this impeachment thing. And Malcolm Nance gets her fired up all the time, and she's almost convinced. And even Rob Reiner's will get her fired up, you know. Impeachment's right around the corner. Right around the corner. It's just... just wait. The wood chipper's fired up, you know.
Well, yeah, maybe she knows something I don't know. Maybe she knows. But see, for me, from an analysis of congressional procedure standpoint, and for instance, your brother in the fraternity of Steve in New York, he's got experience working on Capitol Hill.
Sure, and so does Philip Rick.
Did Billable Rick work on Capitol Hill?
I rescind that. But he's ahead when it comes to law.
But I'm not talking about law. I'm talking about politics. Yeah. I'm talking about Capitol Hill. There's going to be articles of impeachment introduced, if they haven't already been.
By
Steve Cohen of Tennessee. Okay, and you know a bunch of Democrats will sign on to it. Guess what? It's never even going to be voted on, okay?
It'll never be brought to the floor.
And Paul Ryan is not going to let that happen. And look, you're talking about, and we've had all this soap opera drama about how McConnell and Trump are screaming at each other. Well, guess what? We're talking about a Senate Majority Leader who, when he received a Supreme Court nomination from the President of the United States acting in his constitutional capacity, wouldn't even give the guy a hearing. So what makes you think Mitch McConnell would even have a trial in the Senate if the House did impeach? He's a law unto himself, Steve.
And let's back up a minute. Even if Mueller brings overwhelming evidence that obviously points to collusion by the orange monster himself, it goes in front of a House subcommittee, and then they decide if they're going to put it up for a vote or not.
Or it doesn't go in front of a House subcommittee.
Right.
It ain't automatic, Steve.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. And that's why I don't want everybody to get these false grand illusions of impeachment, because I just don't see it yet. This ain't the 70s. This isn't Nixon. That was a whole different kettle of fish.
And Darlene in Connecticut just pointed out to me that Robert Reich, someone I deeply respect, thinks that there will be an impeachment too. And that man is far more intelligent than I am, or ever will be.
And I hope to God I'm wrong. I hope to God you're wrong, Bob. I mean, I don't mean any disrespect when I say that. Hopefully they will find some kind of there, and I need
some sort of an explanation for how it's going to happen with this Congress in power. Because I've turned this little Rubik's Cube and looked at it from every angle
every which way from Sunday
that I can.
I got you.
And I'm damned if I can see it. I mean,
I lie awake at night staring at the ceiling thinking about this crap, you know.
You should probably have a couple of pops before bed so you don't do that. I mean, I'm the only one in this community that has to do that. You know, I do that so y'all have to.
Thanks.
But there's,
we're wearing this together, you know.
You know, there's. I actually had an idea passing through my head. We were talking about, you know, how's the Congress going to make this happen? I read an article. I didn't fully get to it. I had it in the stack for Friday night. One historian saying, you know, if he was to be impeached and if he was to be convicted in the Senate, he might have to be removed by force.
That's true. And we talked about that on the porch Friday. They may have to literally call a sergeant of the arms to get his ass out of there.
Well, the Congress, technically, I think it's the Speaker of the House, has ultimate control over the behavior of the Capitol Police. As Andrew Jackson pointed out famously, the Supreme Court has no troops. Arguably, neither does the Congress. All we've got is the law. And if somebody decides that he is above the law, then, well, you've got yourself a constitutional crisis. Remember what Richard Nixon said, Steve, in the famous interview with David Frost. If the president does it, it's not illegal.
It's not illegal. Yep. And a whole other chapter of this whole bizarre story is, if they did manage to impeachment, think of the anarchy that the Trump supporters would. There would be chaos in the streets.
Right, and your brother in the fraternity of Steve in New York said the same thing. Here's the real wild card. They impeach and remove him. Out come the Trumpanzees, and they've got guns.
Right, and most states, including Georgia, stand as open carry. So it's,
well, DC's
we're in a
not.
Hell of a mess.
DC's
you know?
Not. So, I mean, I remember when some of those assholes wanted to lead an open carry march in D.C., and D.C. cops said, that's fine, we'll arrest all of you.
Not that it's here or there, but is West Virginia open carry? I would say that it is.
Oh, we were open carry before open carry was cool. And now we're also open concealed carry. You can carry a concealed weapon if you're 21 and you've got enough money to buy the gun.
Well, Bob, it's been a rousing conversation. I want to get out of here so you can take on some other callers. I know there's other people that want to jump in, but again, I do appreciate you taking my call. It's always a pleasure.
Well, stop acting like you won the lottery because I took the call. Okay, I mean, it's not like I'm Stephanie or Hartman or, I mean, we designed this for these calls, Steve. So it's actually, as I've said in the past, it's actually for me to thank you for making it, not you to thank me for taking it.
What's a two-way street? Can we just meet it there? And
well, if we have to, but we'll probably meet in the middle of the two-way street and you know, to fight it out with sticks and stones.
All right, and maybe I can hook up with you in New York. If not there, some other place.
Well, I mean, don't spend a bunch of money doing that. We're talking about a couple of hours that we're going to spend on a Saturday or a Sunday just hanging out. That's all that is, okay? I'm not saying don't, but, you know, I was just saying, you know, for people in the New York area, like if I was down in Atlanta, I'd say, if you're in the but, you know, it's not a thing. Maybe someday we'll have a nationwide horn in. But, I mean, it's not something for you to spend a bunch of money to go all the way to New York City on. As much
well,
as
I would like, I would like to cross paths with you and other horn members and just maybe, you know, sit back and discuss this thing eye to eye, you know?
Right, but, I mean, I'm not bringing a broadcast rig or anything. It's just going to be a
No, of course not. Too much aggravation. And that's not a vacation. That's too much like work. You got to hook up all that crap. And everything.
That seems to be something that always happens. I mean, you remember before I went on vacation, I said how I wasn't going to work.
Yeah, but you told me I'm going to take everything just in case. You never know.
Well, and I did, and you know, because just in case. But I didn't, you know, I didn't fire it up or anything. But there I am standing on the Battle of New Orleans battlefield. And, you know, wound up working that night. Can't get away from it sometimes.
Bob, it's been a pleasure. I got to let Cletus out. She's digging on my leg, brother.
Oh, she's a good puppy.
Yep. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See ya. Bye.
All right. See you, man. Bye.
My buddy Steve from Georgia Stan. And look, if hoping for impeachment is the peg you hang your hat on that gets you through the night, you're not going to get any grief from me. To a certain extent, even although I critique it, to a certain extent, if stubbing your toe and screaming "Goddamn DNC" is what gets you through the night, that's okay too. I just wish we could get some reassurance that when the chips are down, we can all count on each other to do the right thing. And I haven't seen that assurance. That's all there is to that. Got about 33 minutes left in the program. We have knocked down $175 worth of fundraising this evening. The way I'm working backwards, so Thursday, no fundraising Thursday, no fundraising Wednesday. We're $25 into tomorrow. I got to thinking about it. Sometimes I'm not real clear-headed. That means if we don't knock out all the fundraising, if we knock out tomorrow, then we're going to wind up $200 in the hole for the... Oh, Jesus. The thing... look. If we can just, let's just, whatever, okay? but there won't be any fundraising on Wednesday or Thursday. And we're $25 into Tuesday. So the total, that means there's $375 in fundraising to go to just wipe out August. And if we did that by, say, airtime tomorrow night, then that's three nights of me not saying a goddamn word about fundraising, and wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? It would be relaxing, I gotta tell you. John in Central PA is with us. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob, what's up, man?
I don't know it. How about you?
Not too much. I want to tell you about the White House briefing that I saw earlier, flipping through the channels, okay? And there that man was, taking questions, and would you believe that he actually said, "Do you have any more questions for the president?" You know what I mean? He actually referred to himself in the third person.
Yeah.
I mean, people in that right there, seeing that, just grabbed me. I mean, I thought, oh my God, this guy really is nuts.
He's the God Emperor of Dune.
I mean, that was, I could not believe that. I was just like, what's wrong with this guy? You know, it's look, I think that he, at least at one time, was an intelligent individual. I mean, would you agree with that? Or do you think that he's stupid?
No, he has not been. He has not been a towering intellect at any point in his life. For instance, and what's more important, he's a goddamn liar, John. Okay. For instance, when he was talking in his airing, his Festivus airing of grievances last week, he said, "And I was smart, and I'm so much smarter than all these elites. I had the best grades at Wharton." Okay, one, he only transferred into Wharton in his junior year. Two, the actual dean's list is published, and he was never, ever on it. Not summa cum laude, not magna cum laude, not cum laude, not dean's list, nothing. So, you know, at best, he was a middling student, and his classmates have spoken to people and said, he never studied, and he went home to New York City every weekend.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. He's a son of privilege, you know? And I mean, seeing that it was just basically like raw lunacy, because I never really see him on television, because, like, I think I told you last week, when I see his face, I automatically just, you know, I have a involuntary reaction where I just turn my head away from it. I mean, I can't even look at it. And you know what's funny? I had a physician tell me that. My physician told me that a couple of months ago. She said, you know, I can't even look at the man. You know, like, that he disgusts people that much. Yeah, I've never, it's something that, it's unlike anything we'll ever see in our lifetime, I think. You know?
Yeah, and the thing is, I'm beginning to wonder if we've already seen the best of this country.
No, I think no. I really think you're right. I'm sorry, but
if we don't remedy ourselves and rid ourselves legally and peacefully of Donald Trump, we're done.
Oh, it's to the point where we will not survive 4 years of him, and I don't mean like we won't survive it as in we're all going to be dead in 4 years. I mean the country itself long term, like I'm speaking maybe 50 years from now, 30 years from now, won't survive this if he stays in it, you know, to the end of his first term. And I think he will. I'm sorry, but I do not believe any of the impeachment shit. I think it's a bad idea for the Democrats, for those couple of Democrats to introduce articles of impeachment, because there's nothing solid yet for us. I'm sure he's committed plenty of impeachable offenses.
Oh, wait. Whoa, hold on. What do you mean when you say there's nothing solid?
There's nothing that we can prove in a court of law.
Well, impeachment is not held in a court of law. Like I said before, impeachment is a political process, and an impeachable offense is whatever Congress says it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But what about the high crimes and misdemeanors? I mean, what?
Well, I said, talking with Steve, in the 1990s, high crimes and misdemeanors were a blowjob.
Yeah, you're right.
And a cigar, but, you know, and a stained blue dress.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, it's like, for some reason, like, I'm going to even go back to the point about the Congress. I just don't see him being removed in that manner. I think, if anything, he's going to have a psychological breakdown, or he's going to expose himself for being the absolute fucking lunatic that he is, and it's going to get to a point where people may pressure him to resign, and maybe that'll be how it ends. But
who's going to do the pressuring? Steve Miller?
I don't know. Right. No, seriously.
In theory, and I've said this on a number of occasions, he has so much proclaimed regard for my generals, that I can't see anybody telling him that except, you know, somebody like Mattis or McMasters or John Kelly.
Yeah, but I still don't even see that. It's like, I don't think anything's going to happen with that, man. Like, you know, it's like the other day on the front four, I listened to the pod. I wasn't able to participate, unfortunately, but I listened to it the next day.
It was a humdinger, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good one, man. It was a real good one. I'm not trying to pick on anybody or name names, but somebody said that the threads are coming apart. I just don't believe that, man. Like, I feel like that Mueller guy doesn't have shit, because how many times how many times was it possible for him to be brought down and it just did never happen? You know what I mean? For some reason, there's something about this guy that he is the untouchable. You know what I mean? He personifies the term untouchable, because there's nothing that can bring him down. There's a lot of times where I thought, oh, he can stick a fork in him now. And it's just nothing. It's like people forget shit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm already seeing how he's being praised for his administration's efforts to rescue people down in Texas. I'm seeing him praised for them doing their job, you know what I mean? Because the bar is that low, you know what I'm saying? And that actually kind of brings me to one of the things I called about was, how do you grade his job or his administration's job on this disaster? Because I just don't know. You know, I haven't really seen any reports on anything. You know, I don't know if it's good or not.
To the extent that the disaster is still taking place, it's a little hard to it's a little hard to grade it yet. Twitler is going to go down to Texas tomorrow and just make things a hell of a lot more complicated than they already are. Hey, John, what's all that noise? There's a lot of banging around going on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's me. I'm not trying it or anything. It's just, you know, I'm just unloading stuff right now in the car. And, you know,
oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay. That's all right.
It's just something.
But the White House said, well, you know, he's not going to go to Houston or anything. So he's going to go and get some good pictures of me with devastation in the background. Maybe we could go to Rockport or somewhere like that.
He's going back here this weekend too.
But it's not going to help. And I remember,
no.
I remember back when Barack Obama so much as said, sure sucks what's happened to fill in the blank. Goddamn Barack Obama politicizing this. Whatever he does, you know, wherever he goes, we're definitely going to do the best job of responding to a hurricane. Nobody's ever responded to a hurricane as well as we have, because we've only got the best hurricane response, the greatest hurricane response. Beautiful, believe me. The larger question is going to be, to what extent will this Republican Congress bend over backwards to give Texas anything it wants? While at the same time, a few years ago, when it was Sandy, they practically made New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut go on bended knee, hat in hand, and beg for relief.
But and it's do you know what the difference is?
Yeah.
One's a red state.
And the others,
and the other one's
right, they had a bunch of goddamn commie, godless, fetus-eating Democrats in them. That's what's the problem.
Exactly. And, you know, it's like, I had to laugh about what you said about Ted Cruz, you know. Not laugh, like, as in, like, you know, I don't think it's funny, obviously, but I think that's freaking, I mean, it's so like that sleazebag to vote against relief for people that are dying. You know what I mean? Like, he's an evil piece of shit. You know, just like Trump is. And I wanted to ask you though, real quick, what do you mean when you say his dad got to become a citizen?
Oh, well, his dad waited around forever and ever and ever and ever to actually become an American citizen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he only became an American citizen when it would become politically advantageous to his son to be one.
Oh, gotcha. So he's an opportunist type. His dad is a real, real scumbag, too.
Oh,
I mean, that guy.
An evangelical fundamentalist crazy pants.
Well, he's like a Nazi dude. I mean, like, he was talking about rounding up atheists and shooting them in a firing squad or something crazy like that.
Well, no, you can go if you want to search deep, if you want to drill down deep enough into the internet, you can find the video and audio of him, of Pappy Cruz and a bunch of other snake handling weirdos literally anointing Ted Cruz to be, in their words, king.
Is that what you mean when you say anointed?
Anointed booger-eating future king of America, yes.
And I know the booger-eating thing. I remember when that happened, I was actually eating dinner when I was watching that debate, you know?
Yeah, and
when he...
Right.
With the booger.
And the...
Dude.
I mean, that... And by the way, that booger image may have been surpassed by a new booger image.
What do you mean?
There is... There's a still photograph from the Mayfield-McGregor fight, which, of course, was just, you know, oh, my God.
I knew who was going to win that. It was like 2016 election all over again. I called that shit before it even really started.
Right, and I mean, it was really hard to find somebody to root for. You had a guy with a taste for domestic violence fighting with a guy with a taste for racist commentary. So,
I didn't know that about him.
Yeah, couldn't they have put horseshoes in both of their in both of their boxing gloves and just let them, you know, crush each other's skulls? I don't know.
Right. yeah.
But anyway, there's this one when a punch connects with McGregor's face, his head snaps. And I swear, I promise you, John, a booger flies out of his nose in the exact shape of the Nike swoosh.
What?
It could not have been made up. I mean, they were like, we got to get this guy under contract.
Right.
He's got swoosh-shaped boogers.
That is so disgusting, man. Damn.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, you've heard of being slobber knocked. Well, that was what happened.
Yeah.
But I mean,
really,
you can find his head just flies, and a Nike swoosh comes out of his nose.
Sweet, man, that's crazy. Well, yeah, that goes back.
And I loved watching the comments on Facebook and Twitter of the white people afterward, because of course this became a proxy fight, and so I saw a couple of precious snowflake white folks going, well, he lasted 10 rounds, and you know, he's only a boxer. He could never last inside the octagon. Oh, please.
I'm sure they were saying that.
I mean, it was a throwback to another time when all of white America was rooting for a German Nazi boxer to beat Joe Louis.
Really?
Yeah, because Joe Louis was black.
Oh, of course. Didn't they have the Olympics in Germany while Hitler was in power?
1936, right? Yeah, a young man from Alabama went over there and humiliated Hitler's master race.
Yeah.
Jesse Owens.
I remember seeing a documentary on that, and I was gobsmacked by that. I thought that was great. And, you know, not to sound like white guilt or whatever you want to call it, but I think that, you know, the African-Americans are generally very, very talented. not saying more so than whites or anything. I'm just saying they are something about them. They have that drive, you know, and I'm not trying to sound
I know, but you get on some pretty shifting sands when you start talking about they. And you can,
yeah.
I'm not calling you out.
I know. You're right. Yeah. But I think it's just something I've took notice to.
But you know he did. He hit Conor McGregor so hard that McGregor saw suns, moons, stars, and new blue diamonds. Sorry, couldn't resist.
What's that reference to?
Lucky Charms, remember?
Oh yeah. I wonder if they even still have the commercials on.
Yeah, but I can't. There were a lot of people that paid a lot of money to see that fight, and wow!
It's obscene. It's obscene.
And you know, look, they the winner walked away with like six-digit millions, and so did the loser.
Yeah,
you know. Those millions going to take the sting out of having a Nike swoosh knocked out of your nose.
Well, you know, all the money that was on that game, that match, points out, and not to turn that match into politics, but the obscene wealth inequality. I mean, it's crazy that some people, you know, my sister just went to a baby shower the other day. One of her best friends she grew up with is having a baby, and it was at her baby's daddy's boss's house. All right. And this guy lives in the suburbs of York City, like right outside of York City, actually. And he is rich. He's a millionaire. So I pull up three big Trump flags and, you know, and I know this guy's business practices. My sister tells me about it. You know what I mean? Like, or actually my sister's friend was telling me about like how they pay them under the table, like $8 an hour. It's a window cleaning business. They're out in all sorts of types of weather. You know what I mean? Like hot heat, rain, whatever, snow, and cleaning windows for like commercial windows, like it's just, you know, businesses and stuff. And this guy pays him like $8 an hour under the table, works him like 16 hours a day and shit, you know, and he is making money hand over fist with that business. And and where's this economic anxiety come into play, though? I think that is all bullshit. All that economic anxiety stuff, and you have been saying it, obviously, how much it's bullshit. And I think it's way more bullshit than people really think it is. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a fig leaf. That's all. It's a fig leaf to cover for racism. And you know, I see, you know, because of my dirty little habit in the morning, you know, I see people like Joe Scarborough say, well, you know, his numbers are falling. He's losing support. It's never going to drop below around 33%, because that's how many Americans are open, overt sympathizers with racism and white nationalism and white supremacy. The bigger problem, though, is the other 20% that will quietly go along with it. These are the people who, back in a former era, were known as collaborators. Okay?
Yep.
You know, they weren't walking up and down the street with an armband on or anything, but, you know, I said, yeah, maybe he's got some good ideas.
And you that's know, what the media is.
Mussolini, hey, look at that Mussolini. He made the trains run on time, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what they're doing with, like, Trump. You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, he is ending NAFTA and all this kind of stuff I hear people say. And I say, you know what? Any other president could have been pressured to do that. You know what I mean? Like, and because the one thing is, somebody, I guess it was Bernie, maybe Trump, made it toxic for any politician in this country to talk about free trade, being in favor of free trade. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that that's a good thing or anything, but, you know, they use things like that. But they use the whole trains run on time thing. And that's what they're going to do. And
look, well, yeah, I mean,
But, I mean, he said there were some very fine people among the Nazis, but there probably were. And you know what? We're still going to make America great again, and he's making America great again, and he's going to build that wall, and Mexico's going to pay for it, even though we are. So, you know, Trump 20, yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah. So,
and back to the collaborators. That, dude, that's your media. I mean, they're openly collaborating. And this is fascism. People have to understand that's what this is. There's nothing else. I mean,
well, I saw a column by Paul Krugman who said fascism has come to the United States. And I'm like, well, welcome to the resistance, Paul. Glad you finally figured that out. Glad you caught up. Nice of you.
Wait, just wait till it's in full force. Just wait till it is in full force swinging. These some of the purity faction, they're not going to know what hit them, man. And
They'll still be out there saying, "Hey, look, let it get us back. That's how we're going to bring on the Apocarev, dude."
Well, they don't realize then that in order to get rid of to wrest the country back from a bunch of that like right wing fascist thugs. Is probably going to require lots of bloodshed, and I just hope that we're not. I don't think we're at.
I can't even let myself think about something like that, John. To be quite honest,
I know I'm not trying to sound morbid. I'm just getting worried, and I'm trying to voice my opinion right now while I can.
Yeah,
you know,
I understand.
It's like not to you specifically, or I just in general, you know, because I feel like I got something to say. And I can't say it around where I'm at because either the people who don't support Trump that I know don't take anything seriously, you know. So, yeah.
I understand what you mean. And look, it is especially chilling that the Justice Department under United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is out there getting and has gotten a subpoena for everybody who either intentionally or unintentionally visited a website in advance of the inauguration because, again, of Trump's paranoid mania over his inauguration crowd.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy shit right there. He probably ordered him to do that. And he's doing it for some reason because he's probably a true believer.
He's doing it to keep his job. He likes being the head law enforcement fascist. Okay, the Klan has a friend in the Justice Department now, and he wants to keep it that way. And the court said, no, I'm gonna, you know, the subpoena's gonna stand, but we're gonna modify it so the court can make sure that innocent people aren't hurt. Well, ain't that reassuring? Hey, John, I got to roll though because we're right up against it, and I want to clear out a couple of more issues before we go. But it's awful good talking to you, man. Hope we do. I hope we talk again soon.
Yep, sure thing.
All right, take care, John. Bye now.
Yep.
Our buddy John in Central PA. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. Subject line: Mueller's shit. With all due respect, let's slow down here. Bob, while I understand the unlikelihood of the current Congress moving forward with impeachment, and I agree with John's characterization of Trump as political Teflon, how exactly does John know Mueller doesn't have shit? Because he's not live-tweeting the investigation? I keep hearing this, Michael says, and again, he's not gooning on you, John, if you're still listening. He's not gooning on you. This is just an inquiry. Michael says, I keep hearing this mostly from goddamn DNC bros and Jill Steiniaks. Well, alongside the cuddly pooty poot, you know, Russia did, it wasn't a hack, it was a leak. And by the way, is anybody plugged in enough to Sparkle Pony World to know what the phrase 5/5S were wiped? I saw that a number of times, and you know, just really, really, because you know, when you're involved in a paranoid conspiracy theory,
there are phrases that let other people know that you're in on the theory, and it's like a lodge high sign or password. I looked it up. I couldn't find it. Anyway, Michael says, I keep hearing this mostly from goddamn DNC bros and Jill Steiniaks. Not trying to put a label on anyone, just saying that seems to be where the line comes from, and it spreads from there. This notion that Trump's hands are so clean, and it just seems like head-in-the-sand denialism to me. I won't hold my breath that anything will actually be done about Trump, but I'm not going to say Mueller doesn't have shit. Maybe that's just me reading something to get through the night. Thoughts? And Michael says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to come off as telling anyone what to do, slow down, etc. Stress must be getting to me. And for what it's worth, John's 100% right about economic anxiety. Even those who seem to know it's bullshit, many still think there's an inkling of truth to it, when there ain't. My thoughts on it? Mueller is a prosecutor. Mueller is not going, this is not Ken Starr. He's going about it the right way. He's apparently got it leaked down enough that there ain't a hell of a lot of leaking coming out of it. And that means that it's proceeding with the gravity that it damned well deserves. And it also means that there's some pretty deep diving going on. And he is pulling at threads to see what unravels. And I don't expect him to live tweet it. Maybe we've become addicted, if you will, to leakage. But if this man is the hot shit, super integrity agent he's described as being, then he's trying to protect the investigation. And grand jury investigations, which he has going on, are secret. They just are. There's no press spokesperson for the grand jury. You'll know what the grand jury has done when the grand jury votes on indictments and makes a determination as to whether it is a true bill or no true bill. And that's just the way that legal process works. But I'm not willing to say that Mueller doesn't have anything. I've read too much about the stuff that he does, that it looks like he is looking into. And on top of it all, the fact that Donald Trump can't stop talking about it. Okay? Among other things, an article in Politico, Trump called Thom Tillis, Republican senator from North Carolina, and called Bob Corker, the Republican senator from Tennessee, to give him shit because they supported two bills that had to do with the Russia investigation. In particular, Tillis was the one who introduced and then got passed the bill that protects Bob Mueller. Corker supported the sanctions against Russia. The person speaking to Politico said that Trump sounded frustrated when he was told that the bill would pass with bipartisan support. He can't, everywhere he goes, everybody he talks to, he can't stop talking about the investigation of him because the investigation is a deep dive. It's going places where Trump knows he can't stand the scrutiny. It's not goddamn DNC Debbie Wasserman Schultz to point out that Trump Soho Tower, or Trump Place, or whatever the fuck it's called in Soho in New York City, was built with Russian mob money. That's not even, it's not a question. He was mobbed up to build that building. And once you're mobbed up, you know,
it's hard to get unmobbed. You know what I mean? So I hope... I hope that answers a bit of a question. Okay, I'm glad to know I'm not the only one who hasn't heard that phrase, Michael. And he says, that's a new one to me. So it's time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. We've at least got 2 days of no fundraising. We got to raise $325 tomorrow, or with some help from the overnight crowd tonight and tomorrow. And we'll be done for August. I really want a fundraising vacation for 2 days. It's, you know, you, I, me, us, we. But $325 to nudge the Norsky, lick the Lithuanian, etc. Thanks to everybody who makes the program go, you who support it, and never have to live to listen to a single exhortation to buy anything to have this program, never have to pay anything to get this program except what you voluntarily contribute. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you very kindly to our midweek utility chat room moderator, Steve from Georgistan, all-around great guy. Thanks for the call this evening, Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. I mention them every night, but I do that because they deserve the mention. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.